This is the news at 1 on RTE Radio 1 with Justin McCarthy. Good afternoon. The headlines this Thursday lunchtime. Israel has announced plans to push ahead with an offensive against Hamas in the city of Rafah, despite widespread international concern. Gardaí have launched their bank holiday weekend road safety campaign and have appealed for motorists not to drink and drive. And a service to celebrate the life of charity campaigner and former RTE journalist Charlie Bird is taking place in Dublin. The news is read now by Brian Jennings.
Despite widespread international concern about the safety of civilians in Gaza's overcrowded Rafah city, Israel has announced plans to push ahead with an offensive against Hamas there. It plans to move nearly 1.5 million displaced Palestinians in the city to what it described as humanitarian islands in the middle of the Gaza Strip. The UN Special Rapporteur for the Occupied Palestinian Territory, Francesca Albanese, says the plan simply won't work.
Israel has been using humanitarian language to cover what is de facto the commissions of crimes in Gaza. Safe zones, evacuation orders, nothing has worked according to international humanitarian law. Where are these 1.4 million people going to go? Which houses? And there are not even enough tents to host these people.
Gardaí have appealed to motorists to plan ahead and organise a safe way home over this St. Patrick's Day bank holiday weekend. It comes as the chair of the Road Safety Authority says some worrying trends around fatal crashes in Ireland last year are emerging. Figures from the RSA shows that 42 lives have been lost on the road so far this year, three more than this time last year. Liz O'Donnell says alcohol is a real problem for road safety and speeding is also a big factor.
The Gardaí are reporting that, you know, the inebriated drivers are being tested and testing positive for toxicology for alcohol and cannabis and cocaine much more regularly than before. But we are still seeing the same deadly behaviours of speeding. Speeding is really endemic and it's really entrenched in Irish society. People are routinely speeding, particularly in urban areas.
A special service to celebrate the life of the former RT journalist and campaigner Charlie Bird is taking place in Dublin. Members of the public gathered outside to pay their respects to the veteran broadcaster. He was remembered by friends as a man of integrity who was loved and respected across the country. Tommy Meskell reports.
He was one of the country's best-known news journalists. Over a 40-year career, Charlie Bird reported on some of Ireland's biggest news stories. Today, people travelled from across the country to Dublin's Mansion House to bid farewell, but also to reflect on his career and his recent battle with motor neuron disease. Among those attending were relatives of the Stardust victims and former President Mary Robinson. RTE colleagues of his were also here today. The broadcaster Sean O'Rourke remembered Charlie Bird as a man of integrity and a hard-working reporter who tirelessly pursued stories. Today's service heard about a man who became a household name, one that was loved and respected throughout the country. Tommy Meskell, RTE News.
Ireland has been fined €4.5 million by the EU Court of Justice over a delay in adopting a new law relating to electronic communications. The new rules aim to stimulate competition and increased investment in 5G. Our work and technology correspondent Brian O'Donovan.
The European Electronic Communications Code established a set of rules to regulate telecoms markets with the aims of stimulating competition and increasing investment in 5G and other high-capacity networks. The European Commission accused Ireland of failing to adopt the necessary measures to establish the code. The relevant EU directive was supposed to be transposed into Irish law by December 2020, but it was November 2023 before Ireland complied with its obligations. The EU Court of Justice today imposed a fine of €4.5 million because of the delay. The Department of Communications said Ireland accepted the judgment and would now study it. A spokesperson added that the completion of the transposition prior to the ruling had prevented daily fines being imposed.
A fourth case of measles has been confirmed here for this year by the HSE. On Tuesday, the HSE confirmed a third case from a flight from Abu Dhabi to Dublin last Saturday morning. The first case in February resulted in the death of a man in his 40s. The HSE is planning a measles vaccination catch-up programme aimed at around 300,000 people. Now the weather.
RTE Radio 1 weather with Grant. Building a new home? Trust Grant to help you on your heating journey with their home heating design service. Visit grant.ie.
Generally overcast today with spells of rain, heavy at times, especially across Atlantic counties. Some drier and brighter intervals will develop across parts of Leinster and East Munster. Mild and humid with highest temperatures 11 to 14 degrees. Justin.
Brian, thank you. Still to come on the news at 1. Tented city concerns grow for the health and safety of dozens of asylum seekers living in tents on the streets of the capital. As pockets of famine develop in Gaza, the head of Amnesty International says countries delivering aid by air and sea are trying to create the illusion that they're doing enough to help. Also, a fourth case of measles is confirmed in Ireland. Fuel retailers along the border say they face going out of business if excise duty is increased next month. And farewell to Charlie. Friends and family gather in Dublin to remember the former RTE journalist Charlie Bird. That's all coming up on the News at 1 in 1 minute.
Did you know that you can spread the cost of your TV licence across the year? Set up a direct debit now and pay just $13.33 a month. If you have a TV, you must have a TV licence. It's the law. See tvlicense.ie for more. Brought to you by the Government of Ireland.
Watch out. We've got a parade of offers coming through this St. Patrick's Day at Centra. Choose from a award-winning, delicious, inspired by Centra selected breakfast range. Any 5 for €10. Selected Tato 6-pack and Club Orange 1.75 litre, 150 each. And Guinness 8-can pack, only 13.26 plus deposit where applicable. Centra. Live every day. Enjoy alcohol sensibly.
Welcome back. You're with the News at 1. There are growing concerns for the health and safety of dozens of asylum seekers who are living in around 150 tents on the streets of Dublin. The latest figures from the Department of Integration show that there are now 1,260 asylum seekers without accommodation. Many of them are living close to the International Protection Office on Mound Street, where dozens and dozens of tents have been pitched on the surrounding streets. We can talk now to Louisa Santoro, CEO of Mendicity, which is one of the organisations contracted to provide day services for people who are living in that area. Louisa Santoro, good afternoon and thank you for joining us. In the Irish Examiner today, the journalist Alison O'Reilly provides a description of the situation close to Mound Street, and she says, and I quote, "Within seconds of arriving in the area, you're forced to cover your mouth and nose because of the smell which fills the area." She says men are being forced to wash out in the open and to go to the toilet on the street where bags of rubbish lie, while birds and wild animals pick away at the toxic remnants. Is that the situation that you see when you go to the streets where those tents are?
That is a fairly Dickensian description of it, all right. We are a day service, and what we do is provide low-threshold, open-access service so that people can get away from that environment. So people come to us, they can charge their phone, they can have a shower, get clean clothes and hygiene packs, and at our core, we are a food service. Conditions in Mount Street have deteriorated fairly significantly in recent weeks and certainly won't be getting any better as the weeks go on unless we have a much more assertive response.
Who are the people then that are living there? Where have they come from? And are they all international protection applicants?
They are not all international protection applicants. I mean, certainly people who perhaps had been in a tent isolated might see Mount Street as a better option than staying alone up near the canal or what have you. So while the majority probably are international protection applicants, you would have to actually go tent, person to person, to establish that they are all international protection applicants. And from the people that are using our service who are coming from Mount Street, they're not telling us that they're all international protection applicants. Some are sleeping there out of reason for safety in numbers. As you've described the situations down there, it's certainly not a luxury offering to people. So they're going there purely for the sense of safety and for probably better accesses or pathways to services.
And because, as you say, the majority of these people are international protection applicants, then they're not able to access the same type of homeless services as other people who would be homeless in Dublin City. Do you understand why that is the case? Why there are different categories of homeless people?
I don't understand why that's the case. And I think I would certainly say, and we've said for a number of months, in fact, close to a year at this stage, that really where is the response across government from the Department of Housing, from the Dublin Region Homeless Executive, which describes itself as the lead agency for providing homeless services in Dublin. Now, people who are sleeping in a tent on Mount Street, it would be difficult to define them as anything other than homeless. So I can't understand, if we have an existing infrastructure that is paid for through public funding and public money, that is not being utilised to its fullest effect, particularly as the situation deteriorates at Mount Street and near Mount Street.
So there is
simply nothing that I can see.
Do you think then that that homeless services, which are provided by Dublin City Council, that they should step in here now and treat these people who are living in tents close to the IPASS office the same as they would treat anybody else who's homeless in the city?
Well, I can't understand what the distinction is being here, that people who are living in a tent are not considered to be street homeless. And if you actually look at the DRHE in terms of what their stated mandate is, it is that they are the lead statutory local authority responding to homelessness in Dublin and adopt a shared service approach. We're not seeing the evidence of that in the context of our service. There is additionally, there's an outreach service that is resourced, that is extremely experienced, and in their own stated mandate, they say they engage with adults who are sleeping rough and support them into short-term homeless accommodation. That's clearly not happening on Mount Street.
You are one of the official agencies contracted to provide services for the people there. But there are other volunteer groups who come to that area on an ad hoc basis, and they provide food and services to the people there also. Is that replication of services causing problems?
I think coordination, resources are very scarce, and coordination is extremely important, because people are relying on the information that they are given by a person who is offering them support to be completely accurate. And this is where a better shared service approach would be much more useful for the people that are needing it.
Are you worried about the health of the people who are living in those tents now?
This is not exclusive to this group. I don't think that anybody's health is improved by sleeping in a tent, whether you are an international protection applicant or not. So your health is very difficult to manage in that environment. We certainly know that there are good responses. Our colleagues at SafetyNet provide an excellent response, and the HSE. And a lot of this is, we divide this resource cleverly, and so that it reaches the people that need it but most. But there's absolutely no question, but without adequate sanitation, water, access to clean clothes for anyone, health is very difficult to manage.
All right, Louisa Santoro, CEO of Mendicity, thank you very much indeed for talking to us on the News at One. Now, Dublin City Council told us that the Department of Integration is required to provide accommodation to international protection applicants who seek it, and the Dublin Region Homeless Executive is aware of the significant challenges faced by the Department of Integration and its current effort to resolve the situation in Mount Street. Well, let's talk now to Labour Party Councillor Dermot Lacey, who's a member of Dublin City Council and is the chairman of the South East Area Committee for the Council, which covers the Mount Street area. Dermot Lacey, good afternoon. Thank you for coming to studio.
Not at all.
Is the City Council taking enough responsibility for the conditions on this site around Mount Street now?
Well, they weren't up to this. I mean, part of the problem is that there are different agencies responsible for different elements of this.
excuse me, Dublin City Council and Dublin Regional Homeless Executive, as Louise said, doesn't have responsibility in relation to the international protection seekers. However, there are people living in tents in this area, and that's completely unacceptable. Dublin City Council has gone down there recently to clean the area, to provide some facilities, but we need to provide facilities for the people there. However, the bottom line is we need to get people out of tents. We need to get people into accommodation, but, and that's the major task.
But there isn't accommodation there for them at the moment. Does there need then to be washing facilities and toilet facilities put into that area on a temporary basis?
We do need to put them in on a temporary basis, but we need also to ensure that it doesn't become a permanent camp. So we have to provide the long-term, in a very quick-term solution to this. There are facilities around the area that could be used. I mean, we have been proposing the use of Bagot Street Hospital probably for about 4 years now, and the HSE sits on us and allows that building to deteriorate. We've also proposed a number of other buildings. There's a lot of empty office blocks here. What we need is imagination and action from the Department of Integration. The local councillors will support this. This isn't a case where the local politicians are sort of siding up against the asylum seekers. We want to help them. We want to help resolve this particular problem.
The people who are living in those tents, they're homeless people. They're the same, they have the same experience, the same levels of homelessness as anybody else who is homeless in Dublin City. Why are they being treated differently? Why are they not able to access the homeless services provided by Dublin City Council?
Well, there's two things here. First of all, they are treated differently because that's how the law presently lays it out. But
is that the law or is that a policy decision?
No, that's the law, as I understand it. That Dublin Regional Homeless Executive has a responsibility for, if you want, Indigenous long-term homeless people in Dublin City. But it's really important for those of us who have supported providing services for asylum seekers and Ukrainian refugees and so forth. We've always said that supporting those people won't stop us helping people who are on long-term homeless lists, long-term housing lists for Dublin City Council. And it's important that we keep that promise, that we keep that pact. The role of providing accommodation lies squarely with the Department of Integration and the Department of Housing. We will support them in doing that. We will support, you know, revamping of buildings. We will support, you know, any measures that we can to do it. But we also have to deal with the local, far too high homeless situation in this city. Both problems are important, but there are two different agencies responsible for doing this. And maybe that's part of the problem, Justin. You know, our local government structure is appalling. We do need to reform that, and we could go on about that for another hour. I want to see the department that is responsible getting involved in solving this problem. Local councillors, local TDs will help them do this, but we need them to do it.
All right. Labour Councillor Dermot Lacey, thank you very much indeed for talking to us today. Now, public health teams from the HSE are dealing with a fourth case of measles in Ireland. The number of confirmed cases now compares to the total seen in 2023. The HSE is finalising its plans for a broader rollout of a proactive MMR vaccine catch-up programme in response to the rise in measles cases in the UK and in Europe. We can talk now to Dr. Lucy Jessop, Director of the National Immunisation Office. Dr. Jessop, good afternoon. Thank you for joining us on the News at One.
Thank you.
What can you tell us about this fourth confirmed case of measles in Ireland now?
Well, we aren't able to give information about specific cases, so there are four cases confirmed, and that would be in line with what we have been saying for a number of weeks now in terms of the fact that there are an increase in cases across Europe, and therefore we were aware that we may well see increase in cases in Ireland as well over the next few weeks.
And can you tell us, is this fourth case connected in any way to an alert which was issued on Tuesday about a case detected on board an Etihad Airways flight which arrived into Dublin from Abu Dhabi at 6:30 in the morning last Saturday?
Yeah, again, I can't give details about any of the cases. And as you say, we did issue an alert about that particular flight. And we have been working with the airline around that and raising awareness of those passengers for the signs and symptoms of measles. And I think that's the most important thing. If anyone is a passenger on that flight, advice has been given and very important to make contact with public health if they're in a particular risk group.
Have you managed to contact trace all of the passengers on that flight?
Well, we've been working with the airline around that and giving information to those passengers to make sure they're aware of both the signs of symptoms of measles and anyone who, babies under one, pregnant women and those who are immunocompromised, to make contact with public health. That's very important, and that is ongoing.
We have 4 confirmed cases in Ireland now. Are you also aware of other probable or suspected cases?
Well, in terms of raising awareness with our general practitioners and our hospitals, there are swabs happening on a very regular basis if people are coming in with suspicious symptoms, and that's very important to make sure that we are notified of cases or potential cases straight away. So there are several other, swabs ongoing in terms of making sure that we are aware of any cases. So it's very important people who may have the signs and symptoms of measles to seek medical advice, but to call ahead so they can be isolated in case it is measles and they don't spread that to other people.
You're finalising a plan for the rollout of a proactive MMR vaccine catch-up programme. When will that be ready?
So we'll be releasing more details about that on Tuesday, so after the St Patrick's weekend holiday, and we'll give more details to people about that, and they can find more information on that on the HSC website from Tuesday.
Okay.
We already do have that programme running in it with general practitioners, and children have been able to access that vaccine for a little while now.
So who is eligible then? Who do you want to see getting that vaccine?
Well, really, the people to get that vaccine are those who we know may be under-vaccinated, so may have missed vaccine when they were children. So we offer vaccine on a routine basis to one-year-olds and those in junior infants. But we do know from various studies that adults under the age of 25 may have missed out in the past, so it's very important that they would come forward. Some of our under-vaccinated communities, and then we're also calling forward healthcare workers as well. If they're not aware that they're immune to measles, it's important that they make sure that they have had their MMR.
And for people then who were born before 1978, are you still advising that those people don't need to get a vaccine?
Yep. So in the main, if you were born in Ireland before 1978, there was a lot of measles circulating in Ireland and you're likely to have been infected. And again, there are studies that would show that. So those people don't necessarily need to come forward for an MMR. If they're a healthcare worker, then it is recommended that they still come forward. If you weren't born in Ireland, you may well need to come forward. Ireland started its measles vaccine campaign in 1985. Actually, some other countries like America and the United Kingdom started in 1968. But we would encourage people who aren't sure to speak to their general practitioner.
But we do know that in Ireland recently there was one fatality related to measles, and we're aware that that person was born before 1978. Has that caused you then to rethink who should be eligible?
Well, we do know, like I say, that most people will have been exposed to measles in that time. So the National Immunisation Advisory Committee are advising people who are healthcare workers to come forward, even if they were born before that time. Also, if you're living with vulnerable people, so maybe people who are immunocompromised, who are pregnant or babies under one, again, you can come forward to get the vaccine as part of the programme.
The first dose of the MMR vaccine is routinely given to babies when they reach the age of 1 year old. Is the HSC now, though, offering it to younger babies if they are travelling to areas where there might be an active outbreak?
So I suppose there's a few things there. So the vaccine isn't as effective with the baby if they're vaccinated under the age of one, because there are maternal antibodies still within the baby's circulation that may neutralise that vaccine. So it's very important that everybody gets the vaccine at the age of one or just after the age of one. If someone's travelling to an area where there's an active outbreak, that and a dose of MMR can be given from the age of 6 months, but they do need to repeat that vaccine again after the age of one. That's the really important point.
Okay, and there is a report in the Examiner, a newspaper today, which references a HSE risk assessment suggesting that there is a high risk of measles spreading in settings where the uptake of vaccination is uncertain, including in asylum seeker accommodation and direct provision centres. What is your concern there in relation to those settings?
Well, effectively, as we know, that measles is very infectious. So in a population where people are unvaccinated, one case of measles can affect up to 12 to 18 other people. So we're very concerned about it being spread in anywhere where there are people living in close contact who may not be vaccinated. And as I said, some countries may not have had such a high MMR uptake as we have had in Ireland. So that's why we're targeting people that we know may have a lower uptake of MMR to try and stop the spread of measles because it is so infectious.
Okay, Dr. Lucy Jessop, Director of the National Immunisation Office, thank you very much indeed for talking to us on the News at One. A former Garda will be sentenced tomorrow after pleading guilty to 6 charges of assault causing harm to his former wife and 2 stepchildren between 2008 and 2019. The wife of 38-year-old Mark Doyle said that he took her family through horror after horror over a 12-year period when they were together. Maeve Doyle described her former husband outwardly as a respected member of the community, but a monster in our home. Our crime correspondent Paul Reynolds was in court. Paul, what did you hear today in relation to this abuse?
Well, we heard a litany of abuse, coercive control and domestic violence that Mark Doyle subjected his wife and family to over a 12-year period. Doyle was a Garda who served in Cabra, Blanchardstown and Ronanstown in Dublin before he was suspended and ultimately resigned after a criminal investigation into his activities commenced by the Garda National Protective Services Bureau. Giving evidence today in court was Detective Inspector Adrian Kinsella. We heard that Doyle admitted on various occasions to punching his wife Maeve in the side of the head, perforating her eardrum, whipping her with his jacket and cutting her with a zip. She needed staples after that attack, throwing a chair at her, slapping her, kicking her in the side of her body with boots as she lay on the ground. She required hospital treatment and medical treatment for many of these attacks. We also heard that Doyle, on one occasion, took a cup of tea out of her hand that her son had made for her and smashed it against the wall behind the sofa. We heard that he grabbed her by the hair and marched her down the hallway of their home, and that he also choked her. He attacked her while she was pregnant. He also blamed her several times for his violence, saying to her, "See what you made me do, you just won't stop." He also hit her stepchildren, who are now adults. On one occasion, laughing as he fired a pellet gun into one of the children from behind and removed the pellet with a tweezer, he shouted at the children. Violence was perpetrated in front of the children. Nipples were twisted, we heard, and on one occasion he banged one of the children's head off the table while the child was doing his homework.
And Mark Doyle's wife, Maeve Doyle, gave a victim impact statement. Paul, what did she say?
That's correct. In that statement today in court, she spoke about how, as a Garda, Mark Doyle was a respected member of the community, but a monster at home. She described on one occasion, after the school had become concerned by something that one of the children had disclosed, that he turned up at the school for a school meeting in a Garda car, in his full Garda uniform. In her victim impact statement, Maeve Doyle said that she could never have imagined the fallout since she left him, the tsunami of issues, the problems at all levels. She said she was and had been an independent, confident, ambitious 26-year-old woman when she met him, but he left her, quote, a shell of myself who couldn't concentrate and was constantly unwell. She said he ruined every Christmas, confirmation and communion by an incident. Not one room in the family home, there wasn't one where an incident didn't take place. And she also said that Mark Doyle blocked the sale of their home to stop them moving to a new home after she had left him. The court was told subsequently that he has now signed over all financial accounts in the house to her.
What did the court hear then in defence, Paul?
In defence, we heard that domestic violence was ever present in Mark Doyle's childhood, and his defence counsel said that whatever it takes to set matters right, he is most anxious to do in any way he can. He has a new partner to whom he has fully disclosed all this, and references were handed into the judge, including one from his new partner. As an ex-Garda, we were told this weighs heavily on him. It was a career, it was a job he loved, and he has now been reduced to getting part-time building work, effectively being supported by his partner. There also has been considerable publicity, and he'd be likely be forever known for this case. It was also said prison is acknowledged to be considerably more difficult for former members of the Gardaí. His defence counsel said he was full of genuine remorse. He has insight into the harm he has caused. He has apologised, and he understands if that may not be accepted. Judge Martin Nolan remanded the former Garda in custody to be sentenced tomorrow.
Paul, thank you very much indeed. That's our crime correspondent, Paul Reynolds, there. There are pockets of famine in Gaza, and it could spread to the whole region. That's according to the EU head of humanitarian aid and crisis management. Meanwhile, efforts to deliver aid to the war-torn Gaza by constructing a seaport or through airdrops are a sign of international powerlessness. That's the view of the head of Amnesty International, Agnes Callamard, who said that nobody was holding Israel to account over delays to deliveries by land. And Amnesty International's Secretary General, Dr. Agnes Callamard, is on the line now. Dr. Callamard, good afternoon and welcome to the programme.
Thank you very much.
You say that states are hiding behind airdrops or the construction of a maritime corridor to Gaza to create the illusion that they're doing enough to support the needs of the people there. Who are you referring to?
Well, I'm certainly referring to the United States, to the United Kingdom, to many European states that are pretending that Gaza is a humanitarian crisis. It is not a humanitarian crisis. It is a political crisis. It's a political will crisis. It's a crisis of international law. It's a crisis of international rule of law. And it's a crisis of monumental human rights violations. The last thing it is a humanitarian crisis. And yet, this seems to be the only tools that states are willing to use at the moment to tackle a situation which is at heart a situation of human rights violations of international law, and of lack of political will to use the means and the sticks at our disposal to put an end to this nightmare.
What then should countries like the United States or those EU countries or the UK be doing to support the people of Gaza?
Well, I mean, the first thing they need to do is to stop the arms transfer to Israel. It's crazy to be building this port, this maritime corridor, while at the same time arming the country that is responsible for making it impossible to provide humanitarian assistance through road. You know, the first thing that those countries need to do is to halt arms transfer. And the second thing is to really consider a range of economic and political sanctions against Israel.
Israel has said today that it plans to press ahead with its invasion of Rafah and to move Palestinians to what it says are humanitarian islands. What's your own view of what Israel is saying today?
Well, I mean, if that proceeds, we will have all the evidence that we need of ethnic cleansing and crimes against humanity being committed. You know, that forced transfer of population is absolutely unlawful. It is coming on top of the eradication of the physical infrastructures of Gaza. Of course, 30 million dead, a majority of whom children and women. It is coming on top of the chaos and the anarchy that Israel is spreading, including by preventing humanitarian assistance to reaching impoverished, famine-ridden Palestinians. So, you know, those are atrocity crimes. There is an international legal framework which imposes on the international community to prevent those atrocity crimes. This is what the International Court of Justice has also required of that international community to do. It is not by delivering a few airdrops of humanitarian assistance that we are going to put an end to this carnage.
Amnesty International Secretary General Dr. Agnes Callamard, thank you very much indeed for talking to us. We're back with more on the News at One after this break.
Fly KLM Royal Dutch Airlines from Dublin O'Cork Airport and discover over 160 destinations worldwide with convenient transfers via Amsterdam. With frequent departures from Ireland, flying KLM Royal Dutch Airlines, you can take off to amazing Amsterdam, breathtaking Buenos Aires, bustling Bangkok, characteristic Cape Town, discover Dubai, or visit vibrant Vancouver. Book now at klm.ie.
I hid it where I won that funny toy ring out of the penny drop machine, which, thanks to a romantic sunset, ended up being your first engagement ring. That's where you'll find it.
With the Cadbury Worldwide Hide, you can hide an Easter egg online for someone you love. You just need to give them a clue of where to look. Somewhere only they know. Search online for the Cadbury Worldwide Hide. Ireland 18 plus T's and C's apply.
How many Hollywood actors can fit into one tiny box? Thousands, if that tiny box is Virgin Media's new streaming TV. There's other stuff in there too. Live sports, that show you like, your favorite apps, tons of entertainment, and even voice activation crammed in there too. So play it your way with streaming TV from Virgin Media. It's playtime.
T's and C's apply. See virginmedia.ie. Subject to availability. Third-party costs may apply. Must be a Virgin Media broadband customer. Actors not actually inside box. Ireland's best broadband. See virginmedia.ie/proof.
RTE Radio 1.
And David Crockett rides around and says it's called...
Rewind Festival is coming to Dublin. At St. Anne's Park, Dublin on June 2nd. Featuring Squeeze, Gabrielle, Heather Small, Nick Kershaw, Go West, The Christians, Altered Images, Tapao. Rewind Festival. Tickets available now from Ticketmaster.ie. Subject to license.
Music updates on RTE Radio 1.
Welcome back. You with the news at one. Fuel retailers along the border are at risk of going out of business if the government goes ahead with plans to increase excise duty on petrol and diesel next month. That's according to the industry body Fuels for Ireland. It's calling on the government to postpone the planned price increase after the UK Chancellor for the Exchequer announced last week that he had postponed increases on fuel excise for 12 months. Petrol is due to increase by 4 cent a litre and diesel by 3 cent a litre on the 1st of April. We can talk now to Kevin McPartlin, CEO of Fuels for Ireland. Kevin McPartlin, good afternoon. If the increase in excise duty goes ahead as planned next month, how much cheaper will a litre of petrol or diesel be in Northern Ireland compared to the Republic?
Well, already we're seeing a fairly significant difference because of a few different elements of the pricing structure in the north and south of the border. So already in Northern Ireland, the price of unleaded petrol is around 10 cents a litre lower than that of the average price in the Republic of Ireland. And for diesel, it's around 6 cents a litre cheaper. Now, what's happening is those service stations that are very close to the border seem to be reducing prices and trying to match them. And we suggest that some of them are even selling at a loss in order to do that. When you add the excise duty increase on the 1st of April of 4 cents a litre on petrol and 3 cents a litre on diesel, you add VAT onto that, so it actually becomes 5 and 4 cent. And then we're looking at a similar or the exact same increase on the 1st of August. You're looking at a really significant difference. That could be 20 cent by the 1st of August. Then we know there's going to be a carbon tax increase in the budget. We know that on January 1st, there will be a further increase in the level of biofuel blended into our road transport fuels, which also increases cost. And we get into the point where the price differential north and south of the border could be over 20 cent per litre. And that's completely unsustainable. People will cross the border for that kind of saving.
Have you evidence that retailers are already going out of business, or is this just speculation then on your part?
We certainly have evidence that on border counties that there has been a drop of volume of sales on a number of sites between 20% and 30% already, and that is before those new increases come in on 1st of April and 1st of August. So when you have levels of sales dropping by that level, that has a huge impact on a business. You also have to recognise that it's not just about the fuels, because most of those stores will also be convenience stores and perhaps the only convenience store in their village or small town sometimes. And the fuel is very often a driver of footfall for people coming in and buying bread and butter and milk and ham, whatever else.
All right. Kevin McPartlin, CEO of Fuels for Ireland, thank you for talking to us today. Charity campaigner and former RTE journalist Charlie Bird has been remembered as an inspiration, a national treasure, and brave beyond words at a special service in Dublin to celebrate his life. The father of two died on Monday, age 74, after a long battle with motor neuron disease, which he was diagnosed with in October 2021. Members of the public and family and friends gathered at the Mansion House in Dublin to pay their final respects to the former journalist. Our reporter Fergal O'Brien spoke to some of those attending.
He
meant terrible lot to us. He brought the whole country together with the climate, Charlie, and as a journalist, he was just absolutely a brilliant, brilliant journalist. It was just magic to listen to him.
Charlie was out on his own, loved his voice, beautiful voice. I did the climb with Charlie. I had an aunt who died from motor neurone disease, so it meant a lot to me to be able to support him. He's done so much charity work for Ireland and beyond.
I started in RTE at the same time as Charlie, back in 1973. In the old 7 days programme, we worked together and we travelled together through the organisation, and he's a good friend. To touch with him up to quite recently in Clare, so it's a big loss for everybody.
You're Charlie's cousin, hard day for you all.
Oh yes, the family are very devastated by it, and we just wish our condolences to his family and to Clare particularly, and thanking her for all the help and love that she's given to Charlie.
Mr. Bird's friend for over 40 years and his former RTE colleague Joe O'Brien led the service for Charlie Bird and described him as a household name who was loved and respected throughout the country.
When I think of Charlie, I think of his boundless energy and his nose for news. He was a smart dresser, a hard worker, and was eager to do things differently. He was intelligent and gifted with an incredible memory. Charlie was kind and generous. He had great people skills. He was witty and cheeky, and he was also honest and forthright. But Charlie was brave beyond words. Charlie revelled in the excitement of fact-finding and live broadcasting and in his secret hush-hush meetings along the border. But what I'll treasure most is our daily coffee chats and our strolls around the Donnybrook campus. We had many a relaxed Friday night drink when he talked about family, world affairs, his passion for Irish politics, and his fascination with the internal politics of RTE. Now, Charlie would want us to have a joyful celebration of his extraordinary life.
The journalist's five grandchildren presented mementos reflective of his life at the start of the service, and they also read prayers. His daughters, Orla and Nasa, also shared their memories of their father and their childhood in Bray in County Wicklow, where Orla said that their dad never tired of pointing out to them that they had a charmed existence, while Nasa said that her dad wore his heart on his sleeve. Charlie Bird's wife, Claire, said that what made her fall in love with the bird was his zest for life. She said there was never a dull moment with him, and he loved being the centre of attention and all of the crack. They travelled the world always looking for adventures, and they had so many. The former RTE presenter Sean O'Rourke was among a number of former colleagues who spoke about their long-term friend and former colleague. Sean O'Rourke described Charlie as a great journalist, but more so a great human being and a real warrior.
Charles Bird, you adorned public service broadcasting. When I think about RTE, I think especially of you and what your integrity and dedication achieved for the people of Ireland. You set high standards for yourself and the rest of us, and those standards endure and will endure. It was an honour and a privilege to have worked with you and to be your good friend. You were the real deal. May you rest in peace.
Broadcaster Sean O'Rourke paying tribute to his late friend and colleague Charlie Bird, and all of us here in RTE are thinking of our old friend and colleague today. Charlie, rest in peace.
Sport on RTE Radio 1.
And now with the news of sport, here's Greg Allen.
Thanks, Justin. The sun is shining at Cheltenham for the first time this week. Ireland with 10 winners after days 1 and 2. Let's see if that was added to in the first race of day 3. The Turner's Novice Chase, Facile Vega for Willie Mullins, went to post as joint favourite with Grey Dawning for the English trainer Harry Skelton. This was how it finished up just a few minutes ago.
Grey Dawning at the last! A showpiece jump as well! Massive leap! Ginny's Destiny jumps it well as well to keep him in contention! And now the Grey Dawning wandering about, hanging fire slightly. Ginny's Destiny is trying to mount a challenge on the far side. They remain clear, but it's Grey Dawning is doing it up. Grey Dawning has won the Turners.
So there you go, Grey Dawning winning the Turners. First race of the day for the English trainers, British trainers. Today is Ryanair Chase and Stayers Hurdle Day. Both currently of Irish favourites, Henry de Bromhead's defending champion Envoy LN will have...